still support it. I think what changed was the Go. The Go instance no longer uses the catalog, just because we wanted to make it kind of like independent of the local file system. But you, if you want to use a catalog, you still should be able to use one. But in general, you should have it such that your import chain can all resolve anyway. Regardless, the catalog should always be an option. Everything should always be worked without the catalog file.
Okay. Well, then maybe I might need help on getting it, because it was working with the catalog.
Okay.
I did an update to a newer version of Noxua to match Git, and then it didn't work anymore.
Okay. So it fails at the load stage. So the thing to test is just...
I have to go back and look at exactly what it was, but the email I got back from you and Seth was, oh, yeah, the catalog no longer works. So... Okay. I just kind of hard-coded it and left it because it's out of state where it works, but it's not using the catalog file.
Yep. Yeah, so if you go back and determine exactly what the issue is, your one test you can always do is just run L-tools or robot or whatever, and just run it on the roots of the import chain. And if it succeeds, then it should also succeed in the Minerva context too.
Yeah, I mean, we could open it and check it, I guess.
Yeah, or you just looking in Protégé, that's another check as well.
The catalog file.
Remove any catalog file that is there, just so it's an independent test. Fire it up. Remind me, are you starting your Noctua instance just with Plantium.owl, or do you have something else?
Well, that's what I was doing, I'm using the Plantium.owl, but then I had a catalog file that would redirect all the URLs to whichever version we actually wanted.
Yeah.
And I ended up having to go back and change the Plantium.owl to have the specific versions I wanted rather than...
Why wouldn't you want the Noctua instance to start up with the current versions of everything? Is it because you want it to have like the very latest version of the ontology that might not be released?
I don't remember. It's been a while since I even looked at it.
Yeah. I mean, my general advice would be just kind of keep it simple. Just try, just have an instance that runs off the production Plantium.owl and don't try kind of any kind of like tricks to kind of get it.
Hey, Chris. There is one reason when I was playing with Noctua, the reason that I would always use a catalog file and have a local, have all the OWL files local, was just poor network performance at my end. It seemed to load faster.
This is definitely a big issue, and it's kind of, there's a number of approaches to solve this. I'm not quite sure why we haven't done this. So one thing you can do is that you could use a tool like Robot to make a mirror of the import chain locally. And you can just kind of like, you just run robot mirror, point it at the import chain, and it will have everything there locally, and it will make a catalog, and then you start out with the catalog, and everything will work that way.
Well, I was doing that with OWL tools.
Yeah, so you can now do that in robot, which does exactly the same thing, but it's a better supported and well-documented tool. And so that's useful, but also for developers, there's no reason why, sorry, this is going off on a tangent, but in general, and you're not doing it anymore, it doesn't matter. But in general, there should be no reason why the developer needed that entire stack anyway. We should just have a little Docker instance that can start up with a little kind of mini developer version of all the ontology stuff.
And you started looking at Dockerizing the Noctua stack, but I don't understand why that kind of like faltered. What was the problem there?
Well, one of the reasons that faltered is because the data pipeline became... more prominent.
Well, was there any inherent issues with kind of Dockerizing it?
Well, it was difficult, like doing Docker the Docker way for what we're trying to do,
mm-hmm.
or like.
You mean the like Docker Compose and things? Or?
Yeah, Docker has a lot of opinions about how everything wants to be. So I was trying to like go through all their tutorials and all this stuff, and
it would be
simpler in the end. To just use Supervise instead of Docker?
No, we should go the Docker route. This is right. I don't think our stack is that special, really. It's a subset of what most people do.
Well, I think what we were setting it up to do to like build the Guller thing. I think that is a little more specialized.
No, it's really simple. I got it up and running kind of quite quickly with Docker Compose. So I think that's the way we've got to be going for all our stuff. So I don't know if that would be useful for you in the longer term, Justin, if you use Docker. It seems we spend a lot of cycles just going over some of these configuration issues and things like this.
At this point, we don't have Docker running on any of our systems, but we keep running into it every once in a while. We just haven't had to do it yet.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's probably a tangent from what we want to talk about today.
Let a little air in.
Yeah, I found the email from Seth where he mentioned it. He said, I believe we removed all the explicit catalog requirement from Minerva. It should run without, and I believe that is the default.
Yeah, so there was a configuration change with our Go configuration where we explicitly stopped using the catalog.
Could you speak into the mic? It's a little bit hard to hear you. I don't know where the mic is, but now we see your head.
Is that better?
Mic's on the desk.
Yeah.
So there's these two. I wonder if these are live or if that's a teleconference thing.
I don't know, but that sounds way better, whatever you're doing now.
It does sound better, yeah.
Hold on. Let's put the camera back
there. Now you're making us seasick.
Okay, sorry.
Austin's getting seasick over here. It's an earthquake in San Francisco.
All right, so I think this thing works better. Yeah, so I think it was just... there was no change in the Minerva code. I mean, catalogs are still supported if you want that in your own.
Okay, so I just need to find the option to have a catalog file?
Yeah. But as I say, I would recommend keeping it simple and not having a catalog unless you're doing it the robot mirror route.
Well, no, I'm definitely not doing the robot mirror, so. Okay. I mean, what I have now works. It's just in Amigo, you had this big push to get us to use the catalog. So I thought we were trying to do that for everything, but if we're not.
The change on the Go end was we were using a catalog that was tied in with Subversion, where we had a bunch of large files checked in with Subversion, and that's not not the right way to do it. But if you have something, you can still use catalogs if you're kind of using it backed by kind of files in a sensible way. So that would be still okay that way, yeah.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, it's kind of been nice because when I would switch between the live and dev versions of Amigo, I just use a different catalog file.
So it's good for that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for the Minerva and Noctua thing, I think we were just using basically dev versions of stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
right. Yeah, it comes back to me now. That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
All right. Sorry, I got to get going.
That's great.
Glad we were able thanks for helping with that, Chris.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
All right. If you guys need anything, just email it and I'll try and get to it when I can.
Okay. Thanks, Justin.
All right.
Okay. Next item on the agenda. Should we talk about Inca tools? You want to talk about robot or what do you guys want to talk about?
I mean, we can talk about Inca tools.
Okay.
That's fine.
So, as you know, we have a long overdue release. And so we're trying to clean up some of these things that are kind of on the list. And since Marie's here, it's a great time.
Yeah.
And we, Austin and Marie and I sat down and looked at the Inca tool the other day, and there's some things that aren't working with it.
Yeah.
That's right. So maybe I should share my screen or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let me do
that. And then it's probably dual because we are using, first we change like EO to Pico. So like the pass to the different file, I mean, is different because of that. Like the name change and everything.
So I had that, I had it open here, where'd it go?
And for TO, I think it's not working because we are not using .zp, we are still using like the apply pattern script for now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I created a pull request on a TO folder that we can accept. But yeah, now that it's configured and stuff, I mean, I haven't looked at it in a long time. So yeah.
Yeah, so in the pattern examples, it says Pico role now.
Ah, so it's going to be working.
Can you increase the font size?
Sure.
Command plus should do it.
Yeah, okay.
So I made a pull request on the repo, on the Inca tool repo, to change like the path to like the new repo, to the Pico repo, right, and not the EO, and apparently it's working now.
Yeah, it looks like that's been fixed. Oops, what did I do there? There we go. Oops. There we go. Oop. So big now, I can't find it. So.
Yeah, either one.
Okay. So if we go to pico.yaml,
yeah,
and then open one of these.
Yeah, not the bottom one. Yeah.
Like the exposure.
Yeah.
See, these are changed too, aren't they? This looks different than when we were on here the other day. Have you been working on this?
Nope.
Probably the pull request.
And the better way to do this change might be to just regenerate the site using the TE tool. But I'm trying to track this the pull request down right now.
Yeah, but Laurel accepted it like yesterday.
So when I accepted it. It was on the Pico.
No, it was on the Inca tool.
So maybe that it fixed it. Yeah. So.
And closed.
Closed, right. So did it fix itself by doing that?
Yeah, probably.
Oh.
For the Pico, but then still have to work on the TO reports.
Okay. Okay, so Dan, what were you saying again? We probably should.
Oh,
we got an echo going on in here.
Well, I wrote this tool, this command line tool that will build you a Inca tool site according by you. You sort of point it at your directory structure, and it figures out where your patterns are and where your existing CSVs are, and then it just builds you the site. So it automates the process. Once it's built, you can hand modify it, and I don't know exactly what you changed. Because I'm looking for the PR right now.
Yeah, it's.
I can show it to you.
I just changed like the configuration file, apparently.
Oh, is that what you changed?
Yeah. So instead of pointing to the plant, environment ontology is pointing to like the Pico, like the plant condition, environmental and condition.
So it's not updated here, though.
Yeah.
So this one is the TO version of it working? Yeah. No. So now we have like morphology.
Yeah, but I think it's still. Yeah.
That one seems to be working.
Well, one way we can sort of see what the Inca tool thinks the world is like is if you click on the. Once you're done with that.
Sure. What I.
If you click on about.
Okay.
It's poorly named, but it has a bunch of debugging information. So this is sort of what it thinks the various files are it's pointing to.
Mm-hmm.
So configurations are local files, which have come down. Configuration, everything here comes from Git, basically.
Uh-huh.
But you can sort of double check and see if these are all the files that you expect. You can even open them up. If you click the arrow, yeah, they open up and you can sort of see.
Oh, that's cool.
But the YAML files are going to be the ones that are more of a giveaway. The first four files are not data, so they're going to be your configuration. But it's a way to double check. If you made a change and it doesn't appear that you see your change, you can go here and say, hey, my change is here, but it's still not working. The other thing to know about GitHub and deploying via GitHub pages is sometimes there's a couple minute delay between the time you make the commit and merge the pull request and that you actually and you see it on the web. Sometimes there's a couple seconds, sometimes a couple minutes.
Okay.
So it's best to have a cup of coffee or something.
Yeah, that's
if it doesn't seem like it's working.
So this is showing all the different configurations.
Right. Yeah, well, the source config is literally the source file, and the parse config is just after I read it in and convert it to JavaScript.
Okay, and so we also noticed yesterday that, like, when you start typing, you know, and the autocomplete function will, like, duplicate.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, the result.
Yes, I've seen duplicates before.
Show that.
It's kind of extreme in our case. Like, if you type leaf in, you get the first, like, 8 results are leaf.
Yeah, let's demonstrate this. Here, I'll show you. Yeah. Gotta get out of here. Yeah. Okay. And we want to be in the TO one, right?
Yeah, that doesn't.
Does that matter? No. And then.
Yeah, yesterday we were in the TO one. So.
Was that only yesterday?
Yeah, I mean it's only Tuesday, right?
I guess so.
Yep. Oh my gosh.
And plus.
Okay, and then the plus, yeah.
That's stuff.
Like in entity label.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oops.
Okay. So actually, yeah. I want to redo this whole thing. The problem is the disambiguating part of that term is actually scrolled off to the right. So try the following experiment. Shrink your do command to minus a couple times.
Yeah, shrink down a bit so we can get it on the screen. Okay.
And now do the leaf experiment again.
So can I get rid
of
this one?
Just double click it.
Yeah, okay. I haven't used this much yet. Okay, yeah.
You still have duplicates. There's no doubt because the IDs are the same.
Yeah.
But you at least have this other data. The correct fix is either to always allocate enough right space on the right to show the menu, to make the menu pop to the left instead of the right, or to place that list somewhere completely different and as opposed to treating it like an autocomplete.
Yeah, but we don't want leaf to show up 6 times.
Right.
It seems like it's an API thing, right? That's why we're seeing that.
Is this because in the OLS there are 5 ontologies that import PO?
Yeah.
And it's the it's a guess. I don't know. Dan,
I think it's the OLS API here.
Yeah, the duplicates are. I don't believe the duplicates are coming from any code I inject, but the elimination of the duplicates might be my responsibility. It might be that we can tell OLS don't do that. So,
or could we have it come from our API?
Can we just do this? Can we quickly look in, go to your Firefox, how do you do this again? Just look at the URL.
Yeah, I was going to load the network tab.
Yeah.
So it's in Firefox, you're going to use Command Option K.
Okay, let me get this out of here. So like in the address bar, maybe open a new tab.
No. Just hold down the key. No. Go back to the thing.
Okay.
And then hold down the Command key, the Option key, and hit K. Boom. Okay. Click the Network tab. See that little network. Sort of the middle of the page.
I've got this prop to the side here. Okay, network.
There you go, that's it. Okay, now hit reload. Okay, so now bring up your select your pattern again.
Okay. No, just scroll up.
Where?
And you can scroll that network thing around or move it if you want.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, we want to be on the TO one though, right?
Yeah, we're taking the long way around to figure out what the OLS API call is, and that will give us a clue.
Yeah, but I think it's an OLS problem because I remember having seen that the issue.
There might be an option I can give them though, like a parameter that I can give to make it work right. Okay, so now don't do any, hit escape right now.
Do you hit escape?
No.
Hit escape.
Okay. Austin's got his finger hovering over.
Now scroll to the bottom of the, go to the, see that list of network requests at the bottom? Probably the last one and select it.
This guy?
Yeah. Okay, and then make this whole thing bigger now. Command plus a couple.
Make this bar bigger. Yeah. Here you do it. We got three people running the computer. That's good. We'll let Marie drive.
I think he wants to see.
Yeah.
That better.
You want it bigger?
Yeah. So this tells us that's the response we're getting back from. So let's look for five leaves in there, you know, five occurrences of leaf, which I think actually the best thing right now would be to take the, click on headers. I just want to get that URL. So take that request URL.
Copy it.
Yeah,
copy it and then paste it into Zoom.
Chat here. Okay.
Looks like Zoom poorly formatted it.
You can just copy.
I might be able to get it. Hold on. There we go. Okay. You just can't click on it in the Zoom window.
Right. If you paste it, didn't make it complete URL.
And it's 25034 is the one that shows up a lot?
Yeah. Yeah, it actually isn't related. I mean, it isn't only that term because we tried some other terms, right?
Yeah, it's essentially.
Right. But for this example.
Yeah.
And you are right. I mean, it's coming from, because it's coming from different ontologies, like this term is used in OBA, in ENVO, in PPO. So that's why it's duplicated in the results.
Yeah, but it's weird that they look like a. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're right. The ontology prefix is different for each one. Yeah, we have OBA and ENVO and so on. And
so these are things that are mapped to EO. PO.
That they import PO.
Or they import PO, yeah.
So I think this is an ORS.
Do not do that.
But could we not just have it pulled from our API?
But I think we want to be able to, well, I guess we import Kevy, but.
Yeah, but we don't import the entire.
Right, we want to have access to like all of the terms. So, that's a logical place.
Well, one thing we could do.
I'll get rid of the chat here.
Yeah, it sounds like to eliminate the duplicates, we got to write code, and that code is either figure out how to get OLS to do the right thing, or eliminate the duplicates before we display them.
So, sorry, are the duplicates different IDs with the same label coming from different ontologies?
Yes.
Same IDs, different prefixes.
Different IDs altogether. Yes, so you should be able to restrict the OLS to query. I thought this was in our conf already. We said, but it's getting it's already constrained to be a child of.
Okay, sorry, let me get in the Zoom and see what. You said the link was pasted in the Zoom?
Yeah. In the chat, yep. You have to copy it out, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to join in the Zoom up from my computer. Because.
Okay. Then you can get to the chat.
Mm-hmm. I got a moment of feedback here.
Oh, by the way, I'm going to be in Corvallis definitely on Thursday, meeting up with Tim and Lily. So, and I know, Laurel, you said you had meetings or something.
We have a meeting at Brady, right?
Can you paste it in the chat again? I don't see the chat history when I joined.
Oh, okay, sure thing. There it is.
Thursday, looks like there's a meeting at 1.
Yeah, at 1. We don't have
so. When is the meeting with Justin, Chris? The leggy meeting is at 1. Yes, we have a meeting at 1, but till 2. But after that, you're going to be in Corvallis this Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after 2 would work. I don't know, 2 minutes earlier. But then you said maybe next week would work because Melissa's going to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, next week will probably be a lot more active in Corvallis.
We'll be here. Just let us know if you want to get together on Thursday afternoon. That'd be fine too.
I don't know who to meet you are, but
we'll meet at Bombs Away.
Ah.
Yeah, so I think we just need to constrain the OLS query by the ontology as well as by the superclass. Do we have that in the conf already, or would that be a bit of work?
I'm looking right now. I remember at one point I was doing it that way, and I wasn't getting certain behaviors I wanted. Like, I sort of relaxed it.
Food ontology, yeah. P always twice, so that doesn't make any sense. I don't know, it's not the same.
Yeah, these are like.
But they are twice. Yeah, so there's really, yeah, I think OLS is really.
See, this one's abaxial and this is adaxial. These are different. One is the two sides of the leaf, yeah. It's the B and the D. So that makes sense, though. That kind of makes sense why that's happening. And
so I'll make a ticket anyway in the generic Inca form, and then we can figure out just how long it would take to get to that. But just so we have it.
Okay, I made a ticket in our GitHub, Inca GitHub yesterday, and I just tagged you in it specifically, Chris, so that you can be
able. Okay.
Yeah, because we would like to start using Inca tool.
Yeah.
To like make changes in the spreadsheets or the CSV, TSV, whatever file.
Mm-hmm.
Or the patterns. No, ontology, really. It's really what we're after.
What's that?
We're trying to change the ontology. Oh, it'd be nice if we could edit through the Inca tool.
And yeah. So we are also wondering, would it be a problem to have like the ID instead of this weird like string, unique string like, in the first column.
Right. The first column, when you generate a new term, it gives you what looks like just a string of characters. And I'm guessing as the ID. Is there any way to specify that to like auto-generate like our ontology IDs?
Well, here's the thing. There's no login required for this. So if you did that, you'd have to have a central service that would give out IDs to anyone.
Hmm.
So it's the architecture was specifically designed to do it this way, such that the IDs would actually be generated server side once it gets committed. That part would require, you know, some more work on the server side. You know, they're not actually running a service here, but you know, there's different ways it could be done. It could be a Jenkins job that basically runs and checks and kind of replaces those. Sure. It gets a bit fiddly because, you know, how would we do that? Would we do this via pull requests? Would it commit directly to master? But that's the general idea anyway, that, you know, it's decoupled. So the U ID is kind of guaranteed, you know, trillions to one against, you know, being unique.
Okay. So we want, I mean, I guess what we should figure out then is how the whole trip, the whole round trip path looks from.
Right.
Like,
what are the
someone
steps?
Editing and then receiving an ID that they can then use in their data.
So when you say someone, I mean,
a non curator.
Okay. So the idea is to kind of like roll this out for, you know, maybe the, I don't know, kind of like the CO group and people like that.
Right. Cause I think, I mean, outreach is kind of the focus of that. We've been kind of hammering home generating tools for outreach. So this is like our term genie replacement. So we need a way that non-ontology people can look at a table, which is flat, and they understand in a sense to add a term and then receive an ID or receive something that says, hey, this already exists, you know, that they need some feedback. And then,
I think having it go through a pull request is probably, or not a pull request, but an issue is probably a good way to do it, because they're still going to have to be reviewed.
Right.
And that way we could assign, and then maybe once it's approved, it could assign the number.
Right. And I don't mind. Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't mind how it happens. I just think that they need
we
to
just need
feedback.
To track it somehow, because we don't want people just adding things willy-nilly.
Right.
You know, so many people want to do that.
Yeah, because we've had tons of problems with those ontology rapscallions getting in there and gumming
okay. up. But let's just talk more broadly about the workflow again in general. So the goal for this was that you could, without leaving your web browser, make a pull request, mm-hmm. like what you did. But we don't have that yet. Given that we don't have that yet, well, A, should we prioritize that? Or B, how would you expect this to work? Would people just send the file, email it to you? Or how would they go from like what they're doing? Because remember, nothing you're doing on the screen here is getting saved permanently.
Right.
Yeah, but you can download it and then make the pull request yourself, right?
Right, yeah. But that's presumably a high barrier of entry for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think to go to an issue would be good, because then it goes on to it and it's recorded and I don't know if that's...
The problem is if it doesn't save the table, then the table has to get back to us.
Couldn't it save the table? Couldn't it generate it?
It could, but it would go locally, and then that person would have to go to their local machine, grab the file, and then push that up somewhere.
Right, but it seems like that could be engineered somehow in a perfect world.
I'm sure it could be, right?
Because we don't want people to have to email it. That sounds clunky.
So I guess
maybe it could.
How many steps request? Away are we from having a pull request style operation?
So Dan, was that the thing we had to run a Lambda service for, or was there a way to do that just directly via OAuth?
You have to run some server somewhere. We basically need to get an OAuth handshake server running somewhere. We can pay. There's free services on the internet that do it. I was looking at using a Lambda to do it, an AWS Lambda, which is...
Why can't we just piggyback off an existing OAuth service? Like, you know, we use GitHub for login for Noctua.
Right, we could even do that. We could totally use Barista, basically. Barista is the thing we use.
Oh, I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking actually just using GitHub directly, but I don't understand OAuth, so maybe...
No. So one of the tricks Barista does for us is it acts as... When you log in to Noctua, you're logging in with your GitHub credentials. That's because Barista has a secret token that only it knows about that lets it bless your OAuth login. So we could use the exact same trick.
Okay.
We could even actually use the exact, we could, if our curators, if the same people that, yeah, we could treat this like a curation tool, and then the same trick that Noctua uses, this could use. And then, but there's still a bunch of code to be written that Noctua doesn't do, which is the creating of a pull request. And creating issues and gists is easier than pull requests, for what it's worth.
I mean, we could, if it's easy enough to make a issue, it could post up an issue and just spit out the line that they have created, and we can append that to the file ourselves when we approve or disapprove of their.
Yeah, that's why a pull request is probably easier. Because you're in there
and you just. And that's how Peter's doing it too.
But if we can cut down on the work that you have to do to get this like operational, we're okay with that.
Yeah, although in the long run, it'd probably be better to make it less work.
Right.
I mean, a little bit of work and the front end might save us a lot of work down the road. We got to think kind of about maintenance, you know, and how much work it is to manage all these new things that the, what do you call them, the ontology rascallions are going to create.
As long as it's all being deposited on a central repo.
Yeah, and it just needs to be tracked. It seems like to use the GitHub. I think the idea of Barista sounds good if we can tie it in with GitHub.
So, I mean, anyone who wants to use this to make a pull request would already have to be entered into your user's YAML.
Right. Oh.
Yeah.
User's YAML, yes.
So if we use an issue, it could just be anyone with a GitHub.
Yeah.
No.
No.
We'd still have to have them in the Barista system?
No. If the Barista is... the Barista solves 10% of the problem, which is the OAuth handshake. The real problem is... Let's imagine that you are you're already logged in to GitHub. Let's imagine logging into GitHub is not an issue. Then what? So when you press the export button here, the export menu, rather than exporting to the local file system, we want it to do something magical, which is to basically take the CSV, the modified CSV, and create a GitHub pull request and possibly interact with you, the user, so that it gets a description, you know, like a title or something. That's the bulk of the work. Hmm. It's just calling the GitHub. Basically, the bulk of the work is calling the GitHub API and attaching this file and creating a pull request. Is it hard? No. Is it well documented? Yes. Could anybody do it? Yes. Can I do it? Yes. Do I have time? No.
Do you have time? No.
I would love to. I mean, the idea of finishing right now, Inca Tool serves one purpose in terms of helping you create new rows, but it fails at its purpose of giving you a place to put those rows.
Right.
So that last part I would love to finish.
So right now when we press export, that just goes to a local.
Yeah.
And then the user has to. Okay.
So Dan, the current demands on your time are the Monarch UI. Yeah.
Yep. Although Tim is catching up fast, and I'm looking forward to the day when I can hand the baton to him.
Because Melissa does have some funding to work on some Inca stuff. So is there anyone else at OHSU that could?
Eric, have you used the GitHub API before?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Your JavaScript has put your done
much. My JavaScript is very poor.
Yeah.
I'm doing some right now the second time ever.
Yeah. All right, well, let's figure that out because I would like to kind of close the loop on this. I mean, I just think it would be, you know, we really want to start using this in Go as well, and I think having the pull request mechanism in there as well would really kind of like be a sweet thing to have.
Yeah, I mean, I got as far as figuring it. I found out how to do the Lambda right, and I was poised to.
I still don't get why we need either Barista or this extra service. Maybe I'm being dumb. I mean, if all you need to do is have the user log into GitHub, get a GitHub token, and then using the GitHub V3 API, you can just make a pull request.
Yeah, but you cannot store the token on a GitHub site. That's against their policy.
Exactly. So from a security point of view, you want to keep the secret token out of the browser. So the secret token has to live on a server somewhere.
I see. Okay, the secret. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's very doable.
Yeah.
And it has been done over and over, so there's a lot of patterns. It's just a matter of doing it.
So I have one more kind of Inca wrinkle that we talked about on Monday or whatever day that was. One issue with this is that since it's pulling from OLS, the users can't, you know, it's not seeing any of our items that are new on dev. And so, like, for our purposes, it would be good to be able to have a version that would point at the dev versions.
Because so the way the autocomplete works is it's kind of, like, pluggable, so we could easily plug in a goal or autocomplete there. But that would be more work, too. I don't know.
Any changes in the ontology won't be reflected.
So what's that?
I said any you know, they won't see any changes in the ontology since the last release. And of course we should be doing more frequent releases, but
yeah that's maybe the easiest solution here. Yeah. if you really want it should be possible to I should speak into this. If you really want it should be possible to have the autocomplete be configurable so that, you know, for this one we pull it from the Plantium dev goaler, but yeah. That would just be, it'd be more plumbing for Dan to do, and maybe the hard party.
Yeah, and we do have, by the way, we do have a goaler endpoint I mean, one of the modules, the lookup modules, is Golar, because that's before OLS, that's what I was using. But one thing I have been thinking about for this exact case is the idea that if we assume that our autocomplete endpoints are composable, then we could actually say, you could sort of, you know, I'd have to add code, or somebody would have to add code, but basically it would look at the primary repository, but then it would also look at the secondary late breaking changes repository whenever it did a lookup. So it would always do two lookups and then merge them somehow.
Yeah, it's probably overkill for this, because you want to do one or the other.
Okay. Yeah, just assume that if in the case where you sort of had an accumulating set of new things that hadn't yet been flushed, you could have two sources.
Hmm. Only thing is, our two files, like our development file and our release file, are kind of in the same repository. So we don't really have like a dev repository with all the dev versions in it. They're in each individual repository.
Yeah, as long as
the repositories are rather than here, it would query a server. So if you have a Golar server with dev, it could be pointed at that.
Yeah. Right.
And so we can do that today, I think. I mean, that code exists already.
Yeah. I mean, for me, when I'm adding terms, I certainly want to be working with the most recent version. I don't want to be working with the version we put out last February. I know, it's silly, but...
Can we just have more frequent releases in general, though?
Yes, well, in general, that would be good. We're working on it.
It's coming down the pipe. It's coming down the pipe.
I mean, we have done a GitHub release on the Planetology since then, but, you know, it's like, you know, I'm talking about the big Amigo release, like the full platform release on our in our live file.
Yeah. So does that just take, like, a lot of manual tweaking by Justin?
Well, we just have, like, very few hands working on the ontologies.
Our pipelines are not exactly... They're in flux all the time, so yeah. It's like a matter of figuring out which pipeline we're using to do what at this point.
Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah.
But don't worry, we're going to do a release soon. That's why I'm here. And I really hope there will be more often releases.
We're working on the December 2017 release right now.
We'll have all the tools installed on the laptop, and then she will be able to run more releases.
Yes.
That's
okay. So anything else on Inca tools that we need to talk about? Is that enough? I think now getting it working the way it is good. And then maybe down the road, if we start using it more, then it's something to think about. So as long as we know where they're coming from, then we'll keep it in mind. And it's not like we have 100 people trying to use it right now. So, okay. So, next item. You have some things to talk about, right?
I have to get going for my next meeting.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. And get in touch if you're around on Thursday, or, you know, drop me a line.
Yeah, I'll definitely be around, and we'll get together.
You know what time, roughly?
I'm going to be coming into Corvallis at 10, mostly hanging with Tim and Lily, working on the UI. And as far as I know, there's no real constraints other than that. And I would like to get back. I'd like to sort of leave town by, I don't want to stay overnight in Corvallis.
It's a nice town. No, I'm kidding. So what time are you thinking you'd leave?
Probably like 4.
Okay. Yeah. So we could maybe have an hour or so. Okay, cool. Well, get in touch.
I will.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, Dan.
See ya.
So, Chris, do you still have some time?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
All right.
Next thing. I need to plug in.
So, Chris,
can I use your...
Oh, yeah, sure. But I
you're not able to.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, we need to switch. Like,
oh, you want to take over?
No, it's just my...
It's all right. It's
my cable is not long enough.
That's all right. If I need to, I can plug it. Okay. Go ahead.
No, so now we want to do like the TO release and the Pico release and hopefully a Oops release too.
Oops.
Like, oh, oops.
Hopefully it's not an oops though.
Yeah,
we'll see. But I mean, the Q and the Pico, and so yeah, so now we are using like those patterns stuff. So I tweak a little bit the MEC file.
Sorry, you're talking about Pico at the moment, though, yeah?
I mean, we can talk about Pico or Tio. I mean, that would be the same. I mean, if
you
answer for one, I can replicate the step to the other one. So maybe you can look at the pull request on the Pico, yeah, repo.
Okay.
Go over there.
Because I'm, yeah. So now it's working with DOSDP.
All right.
But then, you know, DOSDP has this... maybe there is an option and I didn't find it, which is totally possible. But so when you create, when you run the DOSDP, the ontology name, like URI,
yeah,
is this weird, like all API, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, yeah.
So this morning and yesterday I work on changing that, because then when you import in Protégé, Protégé doesn't like to not.
No, got it.
So I did like a sed. I didn't push that yet, but I was working on like having like a sed replace.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that'll work right now. You can also just use robot to give it an ID, which is a bit cleaner than sed, but whatever works.
I would be happy to do it, but yeah, what robot command should I be using?
I think it's robot annotate.
Oh, yeah. And so you can change an existing annotation?
Yeah, let me find the...
Okay. I've been looking at the robot because this morning I was trying also to work on something. Yeah, so okay. And also I have a question regarding robots. So now with the new release, you know, when you do like the robot reason, you have all those warning messages?
About referencing dangling classes?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
So it means we have... probably equivalence axioms, logical definitions that are referring to classes that are either dangling or obsolete. So if they're obsolete, they can be repaired automatically using the repair command. But if they're dangling, that means something else might be up. So it could be just, so by dangling, it just means it's say pointing at a KEBI ID, but that KEBI ID is not in the KEBI import file. So it might just mean you need to regenerate the import file. Or it might mean it's disappeared from the upstream ontology in some way, or the import generation is not configured correctly. If you have an example one, we can look at it and try and track it down.
So if you can like get this pull request on the
info
and like create like the run the pattern.
Actually, check out. Okay, I'll try that.
I didn't create it. You know, I'm so confused. I'm trying to really do my best, but seriously, that's not easy, you know? And also, robot queries doesn't exist anymore. Is that correct?
It should do. Robot queries, Eric, yeah.
Like the construct is like obsolete?
You shouldn't. Well, it's not obsolete. You can still use like construct if you want, but the more, I forget the exact form off the top of my head, but yeah, the query version will take any type of query, and robot will figure out the.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. Okay.
So I should be running make from source ontology in this with.
I don't know. Can you do make all patterns? All underscore patterns.
All right. Okay. It's running.
It's working.
SDP tools.
Yeah, and so this is where maybe the robot annotate. Is it working?
That seemed to make it all the way through, yeah.
Of course it did.
Didn't work for you.
No, it works on me. I just want to be sure that, and so now if you do like a make, if you do
So I've done make all patterns.
Yeah, and if you do like the make pico.org, then this is when you will do like the reason, robot reason, and then you will see like all the...
Okay, so, but yeah, it's... It doesn't trigger a remake, so I've got to kind of remove Pico and make it again. Okay, so here we go. Okay, running Pico. Yep, so... Okay, so we've got... Oh, EO. What are the... So it looks like something is referencing Pico, you know, 7039 is referencing EO. Oh, but maybe this is by design it's doing this. So let's have a look. Shall I share my screen?
Yeah, that'd be good. I can stop sharing.
So here it's complaining that so you know this nothing has actually changed. It's just giving you warnings about things that have been there already. So, but what it's saying is that there's this annotation assertion, and this doesn't look very pretty. So, Eric, at some point, we probably want it to pretty print these axioms a bit nicer. So it's got an annotation assertion there. So 7039. So when I did the auto thing, I didn't change.
Yeah,
but this was deliberate. Yes. Yeah, so we
alt IDs. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we. It still shouldn't really complain about that because it's still. Oh, I see. It's because it's an alt ID on an obsolete class. So.
Okay, so I can make a regex and get rid of those.
Well, let's see. What we want to track. We want people to be able to go from EO 7039. To go to Pico 7039 to see
that. Find out that it's obsolete, yeah.
Yeah. It's a kind of unusual situation because really, what would we normally do here? I mean, normally we would, if we've merged a term and then it gets obsoleted, do we really have no cases of this in Go? Let me just check. I don't know what we normally do in cases like this. So we have other cases. So I think it's actually fine, and really just robot should kind of chill out with these kind of commands. So, but basically, you can ignore those just now. But we should make sure that they don't get reported. So I'll put something in the robot tracker about that.
Okay, cool. And so. Once I will add like the robot annotate to change like the name of the patterns, like the URI of the pattern.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then we can merge a pull request, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. So then Pico will be good to go, and then for the TO, because there is so many different patterns file. I merge them into one merge pattern file, and then we import this merge pattern file.
Right.
The generated file, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Using the merge command, but then Robert was also acting weird. When you do a merge, it will take the first file from the list and.
But this is after you've renamed the ontology, because sometimes the AL API gets confused if the ontology doesn't have an IRI and you try to merge.
I mean, it didn't complain about that, but just I was not getting the right IRI name. So what I did is I created like an empty file with the correct URI and merged it into that one. Is that super ugly, or is that fine to do that, to do it that way?
No, I think that's fine, you know, because you are, in some ways, you are creating a new ontology that is incorporates all these other ones. So I think that's fine, yeah.
Okay, good. So just wanted to be sure. So for the TO, we would be, I just have to change like, so now instead of using the old pattern apply file, we can be using the DOSDP tool.
Yeah.
And then I will, or Laurel will merge a pull request, and then I think we can do a release also for the TO because the pattern will be in. And so now we have the oops problem.
Yeah.
because what we try to do, so from the APS
scrape, right?
We have this like, yeah.
Are you sharing or?
Yeah.
No, we're not sharing, but we could.
We're not sharing. Yeah.
But we could share. Why don't we show
it? I mean, it's easier to show conceptually than it is to actually like literally show it. So the scrape comes down. And there's some processing that's done during the scrape that gives us taxon IDs, and then so, but a name also comes with it.
Yeah.
So it passes through several layers of filtering where we extract the host name, host taxon, pathogen name, pathogen taxon, and then from the name, we try to identify a plant part that is affected, like a root or a leaf or a shoot or a cob, you know, something like that.
Okay, I didn't realize you were doing that. Yeah. So is that part of what piece of machinery does that? So, actually, is that your thing or?
No, that's Marie did that once. I don't know what it was done with. I think it maybe was a one of.
I don't know. I ran a script for sure, but I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a onesie thing. But we're gonna. I mean, the idea is to get this pipeline chained together, with proper error outputting at each step, so we can automate the whole process.
Yeah.
So essentially, we needed to pull out plant parts because there were diseases that were becoming the same, they had the same axioms because they were affecting different parts of the plant, I guess.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we had to pull out the plant part to distinguish some of them.
Yeah.
So now the disease pattern uses a host, a pathogen, and a plant part. And then the name is scraped, but the names are just like, I don't know what's wrong with APS. They have like no standardization whatsoever. So like Jorrit did a fine job. Okay. Raping them, but the names come down as like just crazy. And so I run. Excuse me.
You're cutting out a bit there, but what you think you were saying is the design pattern always has the name in it, name of the part.
Right. It has the host, like the plant, whichever is being affected, and its taxon, the pathogen and its taxon, and then a plant part. Those are like the pieces of the pattern. But then I use the name that's pulled from the scrape to actually name the class. And then, I mean, I run a script on it to sort of like attempt to clean those names up to make them like readable and at least somewhat distinguished from, because like you'll see a lot of like things that are like black rot, you know, and that's not a descriptive name. So I have to have like maize black rot of the leaf caused by, you know, this pathogen. So the name gets kind of messy, but I'm attempting to at least automate as much as possible.
Yeah. But this is part of the YAML file, right?
And that, yeah, that I think the disease name goes into the YAML file. Yeah. So I renamed them using a Python script that I wrote, and then those things all get munched up and turned into the TSV that we then pass into the pattern apply.
I mean, that sounds fine, basically.
But that we end up having like several equivalent classes still in this file.
Okay.
So now,
because why?
Because I mean, there were like kind of duplicated in APS, and so.
Or it's because it's like the common name for more than one disease.
No, because I cut the name out to make sure that it's not. I mean, the name gets used, but it doesn't.
The name doesn't figure into the logic. So
Right, exactly.
You have name duplicates, you know, which is a kind of lexical check, or you can have actually inferred equivalent,
right,
based on the equivalence axioms.
So we look at the equivalence axiom duplicate, and so to do that this morning, so that was the funny part, because when I use robot reason, is there a way to export easily like the equivalence? Because when you do the robot reason minus D,
we had a... What did we end up doing in this for Go, Eric? We wanted to do queries over the inferred graph. Can you do that? So, like, the example here is you want to find all inferred equivalences. So it's like, it's just a triple as A equivalent to B, but you need to be able to do that over the inferred graph.
I mean, if you turn on the reasoner and do reason first, and then you do...
Are you sure about that? Or is
No, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. I did that this morning. That's not.
No.
Yeah.
We can make that work.
Yeah, that should be an easy fix. So we would just saturate it. So we'd just be, we'd run the reasoner, and we'd just find every direct and indirect axiom, sort it into the graph.
I mean, we could fix robot too. Because right now, query, only will accept input from a file, I think, and it won't.
The sparkle from a file, yeah, but oh, it won't take, it doesn't chain?
Yeah, it doesn't really chain.
Oh, that's a bit of a limitation.
That's why it doesn't work.
Okay.
But we can fix that, though.
Here we actually do have a ticket for this, so it's ticket 158.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, no, that's imported ontologies, but... okay. So, I mentioned this in ticket 158. I say, because 158 is about querying the separate imported graphs. And I have a note in here saying it would be good to be able to query with the reason graph as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, because I did like the most ugly stuff this morning, so I do a set on the robot reason minus E.
Yeah.
Grab the line that have the error equivalence.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I get one ID, and then I remove this ID from the TSV, like the line that contains this ID from the TSV file.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But then I'm not sure a robot is printing like the list of equivalents.
Right, yeah.
But it prints it back and forth.
But first of all,
yes.
So if you want to get rid of lines from the TSV, do you not lose some additional metadata, or is it the case it's a complete?
Yeah. So for now, ideally, I just wanted to have like be able to remove those lines. So at least we can have like a first version of the hooks, you know, push on the
company.
But yeah, ideally, what I would like to do is first grab the names and the synonyms of this class.
Yeah,
that from that line that I want to remove, and then add that to like the one that is like the main class,
right,
that would remain. So that would be like the ideal situation. Mm-hmm. But for now, at least it's working. But what I want to do is,
well, what about just operating at the level of the TSV itself? Just load it into a Python data frame, and basically, or even just do this in a Perl script. You know, it's just. If there's any rows where the columns 2 onwards are duplicated, like just merge them.
it's kind of part of the goal here with these, you know, these patterns is kind of easier to operate on TSVs than it is on Owl Axioms.
Yeah, that's true.
And can this be part of the like the make file and the release process as well? Because I mean, that script can be used also to check when people will be using like the Inca tools. You know, every time there is a pull request, we want also to be sure that we don't create like an equivalence class.
And I think with the pull request and the triggering and Travis, we would just use robot there because it basically we just want it to fail if something. At least this is how I was thinking it would work. It would just fail if it inferred equivalencies. So that part works okay in robot, but it gets more fiddly if you try and use robot to go back and then plug it into something that removes lines from a TSV. So,
okay, so I have a question because apparently with the new version of robot, even if you have equivalence class, it won't fail except if you have like the minus E option.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like saying none, or I don't know what you should be saying. Like you don't want equivalent class. So do I have to add like the minus E?
I believe so. But if it's not properly documented, can you make a ticket saying we should document
that? I don't know if it's properly documented. It's just this morning when I was playing with this. I mean, it was still working. I mean, it was still reasoning on it, even if there was like...
Yeah.
So... But then I read like the new like stuff and then minus E, okay. Yeah. I mean, it worked. But just you need to be very geeky to...
Yeah. I think being explicit is good. So yeah, so you'd be minus E, none.
None, yeah.
Yeah.
So I will change all our make file to be sure that we will check that because before I remember it was failing, but now it's not.
Right, okay, yes. Uh-huh.
So we can write a script that will operate directly on the TSV file, remove the line, or combine them, or whatever, and then, and then have the first version of loops.
I can do that, yeah. That should be pretty easy to do.
Okay.
And then as long as it can execute a Python script. I mean, it's going to have to execute several Python scripts at this point.
Yeah, but you can do that. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah. No, that's totally no problem. And then when people add terms, it won't run that. It'll run robot and make sure that people are not adding.
And we crash and then,
hopefully return some sort of error to the user. Okay.
And then we were also looking at the different patterns because between TO... EO and
we need to synchronize.
This might need to be an entirely new meeting because this can open a lot of cans of worms. Because we have things like, we have traits in the trait ontology, which are responses to environments. And then we have environments that are patterns
that are
exposures to stimuli. And then disease is... a response to a stimuli. It's patterned as a process, which is the response to some stimuli that occurs in those environments. So there's like a triangle of patterns that somewhat duplicated. And I don't know what the best way to go about it is. I'm okay changing any or all of the patterns. I just need to know what the best option is.
Yeah, like you say, maybe that's another.
Yeah, I think that's maybe something.
So maybe let us get up. We can sit down and like hash out what we have, what we would like to have, and then maybe we can have a meeting at some point to have ontology people fight about the correct.
Yeah, but we don't want these to be.
I don't want like a. I don't want a lot of people involved.
Too long because we would like to do the.
No. I'd like to have it done. Like I'd like to have it pragmatically. Finished. So maybe that should be
maybe we work on that tomorrow.
Yeah, we can build a pitch or something.
But in general, if the imports graph is acyclic, it's much better.
Yeah. No, I mean, of course. So yeah, we'll have to figure out how that works.
And maybe the thing to do is to kind of look at a couple cases and then be clearer, like look at a couple diseases in the three.
Because it's not just diseases. We want also abiotic stresses.
Right, I know. Yeah.
And then we have stress and the disease. The problem is treatments. Like, how do you deal with treatment versus stress? Like, is a treatment considered stress? That's where I'm getting hung up.
It can be.
And if
if it's like a drought treatment, it
yeah.
Would be.
So, but we might
you're
need
treating
to just
with a stress.
We might need to just move the stress level up one and just call it exposure, and then have two categories that are either like, I don't know, treatment or natural. I don't know. I don't know where the break is.
Yeah, I don't know. You mean like in oops?
Yeah.
Well.
So I guess it's going to be a really long conversation. So we should
And you know, there's this other issue is that we couldn't use the response or sensitivity or resistance equivalence axioms for TO because they're in the wrong branch in PEDO. So we were going to open an issue for that, Chris. I don't know if you caught that. Because they're all like the sensitivity to and resistance towards. Resistance to are actually physical. They're physical object qualities, not organismal object qualities.
Physical is generic, though, at least, so it's still okay to use it.
But it put them in the wrong hierarchy. I'm probably not explaining this correctly because I have my notes on it upstairs at my desk, but...
Yeah, just the... So all our abiotic stress end up being inferred under morphology. So we had to change a little bit the pattern, so...
So I was going to open a tracker for that on PEDO. Maybe I'll do that when we get back up or tomorrow. So.
Oh, maybe we should change like our definition of morphological.
Well, but change it to what? Physical object quality. That's kind of the weird thing. I mean, the morphology in PEDO is not the same as the morphology in TO.
It should be. I mean, we can't. That's.
Well, I mean, what?
Remind me what the difference is again.
Well, because of some of the categories that are, you know, plant scientists consider morphological are not included under morphology in PEDO. So I don't know if you remember this, but what we're using for the equivalence axiom for the morphology traits is actually physical object quality to encompass the other things like color and shape.
Okay, so that's color is considered morphological?
Yeah. And I may not be saying this completely correctly because I haven't revisited this issue for a while, but that's sort of that was kind of our workaround at the time.
Yeah.
But so I don't know how we deal with that.
Yikes.
But you know, one thing we had talked about was that all those traits in TO should probably be renamed responses.
Right.
Not resistance right. or sensitivity, but still response to is in the same branch as...
Wait, we've been around this a few times before, haven't we? By calling them responses, their responses would be processes.
Yeah, but
that's... Yeah.
Is it? Can you have a a response to a process? That's the thing that we're... Stress is right now.
Response to is in Go as a process. So you would be mixing your trait ontology with processes, and both terminologically and ontologically as well. So I thought we went around this a few times and we agreed, I don't know the exact term, but it would be something like responsivity.
That is what is currently in.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
What's currently in?
Like the responsivity.
Yeah, not responsivity.
You mean in
the
pattern?
Yeah, in the pattern.
So what
that
term
is
the does it use?
But then you use sensitivity towards... In the pattern,
yeah,
and it's still under like physical,
yeah, that's the problem.
Object quality, anyway. So, no,
yeah.
Is there not a responsivity term?
There's response to.
There is responsive. You could use the PEDO responsive too.
Response.
Yeah, because this is one of these.
Yeah, that doesn't really
qualities make. You can.
I was just looking at this morning. So anyway, this is something we could discuss more. I think we need to kind of wrap up here, but just wanted to bring that up so that we, so here. See, morphology is right under physical object quality. And then the physical quality is like a sibling of it. And that's where like resistance to and sensitivity towards are.
Right.
And response to.
And if we use that.
I think they should just be, I think you're right. They should probably be, well, I guess they're not organismal because you can have cellular responses.
Right.
I don't know. I think there's a good argument to be made for putting them under organismal.
Yeah. What's the definition of organism?
Maybe the most pragmatic spot.
Because it says an entire organism or a part of an organism.
Done.
Right?
Work yeah. for me.
Okay, well, I'll open an issue about that. And just another heads up, Chris, I think you probably are, I don't know if George is doing these or you're doing them, but I just came back from a meeting in Florida with the flagellate plants group and the carex group, and they have a whole bunch of pedo terms they want to add.
Well, get them in the tracker, and basically George, we can call George and see if he can do it or have someone do it, but he's
yeah, not. Or if you want to, you know, at one point we had kind of talked about you know, giving us editing rights or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. So anyone can do that. So I was going to say just because
yeah. you know,
responsivity hasn't been great, what numbers have been doing is just, yeah, we just say, if you can make a pull request, or I can give you direct permission if you want as well, you still make a pull request. One
and we kind of revisited, I don't know if you remember that discussion about the whole plant qualities that we were talking about I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We kind of revisited that when I was down there, and it may come back. We may want to do that. So
yeah.
Lots of things going on.
Yeah, but just the first thing is just get them in the tracker and then we'll triage them. Yeah. If there's a lot of triad, we need to get design patterns implemented in Peyto actually for the triads. But at the moment, if there's triads, I can add them really quickly just using a really hacky script.
What's the triad? Sorry?
Triads, like if it's like responsivity to increased responsivity to decreased.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Triads.
You should really just have a YAML file for it but, and do it.
to create all the versions of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for.
All right.
When can you
schedule? Oh yeah, when can we meet again?
Discuss this because.
Yeah. Next week.
Okay, Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
what works for you, Chris? And is where is
Monday
here in the afternoon?
Four.
Monday at four.
I'm clear.
I think that works for me. I don't know where my calendar is, but I should be here.
I still be here. I'm not in the bed by the kilo on campus.
Yeah. we had a little incident on campus today, but hopefully it's nothing.
Oh.
Yeah, like a you know, everybody's so on edge about threats and stuff right now.
All right. I hope it was a false alarm.
Yeah, well, it was a social media, you know, threat. They got the guy in custody, but they don't know if that's...
They got a guy.
Yeah, they got a guy in custody, but they just sent out a thing that they canceled all the evening classes and everything. So anyway, right. You know how this is. This is the world we live in now. Anyway, Monday at 4 sounds good.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds great. All right.
All right.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Catch you later.
Catch you later. Yep. Have a good evening.
So I think we need to move the meeting with Yorick back like a half hour.